Homelessness is the result of serious gaps between government programs and human needs, serious differences in the housing market in different urban centers, and the basic supply and demand gap that keeps housing costs high at a time when jobs don't pay enough to support rent or a mortgage. Homelessness follows the economy, and overall homelessness in the U.S. has decreased since the worst times of the 2009 recession. But according to a 2014 report from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, it's on the rise across the country's 50 biggest cities. In Washington, D.C., for instance, the homeless population increased by almost 13%, and that's on par with Los Angeles. Stephen Pimpera is a lecturer in American politics and public policy at the University of New Hampshire. He's the author of A People's History of Poverty in America, and says homelessness is actually a collection of a whole range of social problems.
I mean, ultimately, homelessness is a reflection of a particular kind of poverty. And we're here talking about not necessarily absence of money, but absence of housing. When all is said and done, homelessness is a housing problem. And it sort of shows up in two different kinds of ways. One is chronic long-term homelessness. This is often the sort of the visible homelessness, often of, say, men who are living in the street, often with addiction disorders or mental illness. That's maybe about 15% of the overall homeless problem in the United States of America. And then the other 85% is short-term homelessness, more often families with children who may be homeless for a month or 3 months or 6 months. In both of those instances, although there may be rooted in different kinds of longer-term solutions, the problem is lack of access to stable housing, and that for that second group of people, the short-term homeless, it is largely a product of the failure of wages to be high enough for large enough people to pay what going rents are in big cities, which is in part why you see homelessness concentrated in big cities. That's where we're having, you know, sort of the most inflation in housing prices.
So when we talk about an emergency in a city like Los Angeles, we're really talking about the gap between wages, living wages, essentially living wages, and the availability of low-cost housing in a big metropolitan area.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's if you look at places like New York and California overall, in order to afford sort of a median two-bedroom apartment, you need to make $25 an hour. Minimum wage, national minimum wage is $7.25 an hour. So you need 3 to 4 times minimum wage in order to buy housing. That's, you know, an enormous problem for larger and larger numbers of people, which is why we do, in fact, see a lack of stable housing tracking to poverty.
So the market isn't going to take care of that. That really requires progressive and forward-thinking urban planning, and you don't necessarily get that in this era, although it varies from city to city, I suspect.
Sure. Although, you know, absolutely, ultimately, the problem is more housing available to larger numbers of people. And in places like San Francisco, especially, this is really acute because geography is getting in the way, among other things. But there are actually sort of programs that solve this. The Section 8 housing voucher program works more or less like food stamps. If you meet certain eligibility requirements, federal government will subsidize your housing, usually tie your rent costs to a third of your income, and then they'll send the difference to your landlord. So it winds up sort of having the government step in and make up for those market failures. The problem is that in most cities, the waiting list is so long to get into that program that they've stopped adding people's name to the list. And that problem was made worse not long ago with the sequestration, right? That ridiculous sort of budget fight that resulted in fairly arbitrary cuts across the board, resulted in the loss of something in the neighborhood of 100,000 of those housing vouchers.
You said a moment ago that 15% of the homeless population is people with addiction problems, mental illness problems. It seems to me there would be a specific program for that 15% that could conceivably alleviate that problem. Is there a way to direct resources to that problem? And how does that work specifically on the street?
For a long while, the sort of the approach for people trying to deal with that kind of homelessness was to deal with what social workers call the co-occurring disorders, the mental illness or the addiction, first in order to get people in a position where they could maintain stable housing. That tended not to work too well. And recently, the consensus, at least among researchers and homeless service providers, is what's often referred to as a housing first solution. And that is that you get people into housing, ultimately absent conditions. So they go into housing, they are carrying their addiction with them, and very often are permitted to keep using or to keep drinking. But the theory behind it is that once you get people stably housed, there are greater spaces available to then treat the addiction, to treat the mental illness, to treat the physical illness when they're in place. And the results from those kinds of approaches have been extraordinarily successful.
Finally, in Los Angeles, they declare a state of emergency. What does that even mean? And how would you address a housing emergency other than, you know, calling a news conference?
Well, I mean, it's you know, from what I've read of what's happening in Los Angeles or what's been happening in East Harlem just this week with the announcement of a new police force designed to deal with homelessness in East Harlem, they're not characterizing it as a housing problem. They are characterizing it as a problem of large numbers of people who are visibly homeless in public spaces. And very often, our solution to that is to, in fact, to bring in police forces to identify this as a problem of misuse of public space. And those solutions wind up solving that problem pretty effectively. They wind up pushing those populations to other places so that we are not confronted with their presence on a regular basis. But an approach to homelessness that is thinking of this as a police problem rather than a housing problem is not, in fact, ultimately going to reduce improve the well-being of people or reduce the amount of homelessness.
Stephen Pimpare is a lecturer on American politics and public policy at the University of New Hampshire and author of A People's History of Poverty in America. Stephen, thanks so much.
Thank you, John. Pleasure.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.